I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
We begin this hour with the Republican presidential race after Donald Trump's overwhelming win at last night's Iowa caucuses. It wasn't even close. Trump won 51% of the vote, 30% more than his nearest rival. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis finished second. Former U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley was just behind. Trump is the first Republican candidate ever to top 50% of the vote in Iowa. That's despite all his legal challenges and what some call his extreme rhetoric. Nikki Haley joins us now from the next battleground in this Republican contest, New Hampshire. Madam Ambassador, good morning.
Good morning from snowy, beautiful New Hampshire. It's great to be with you.
Ambassador, all good presidents are tested by adversity. You have some. Why is this race not over?
We're just getting started. I mean, Iowa's the first, then New Hampshire's the first in the nation, then we go to the first in the South and South Carolina. This is what plays out in presidential elections. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. And we're taking it one step at a time. Iowa was very good to us, but we are super excited to be here in New Hampshire and go ahead and make this even stronger.
Those are the words of Nikki Haley as she was talking to CBS News this morning, as you heard, from New Hampshire. And talking about, well, we did not win as we expected in Iowa. We just didn't make it happen. So now we're on to New Hampshire. Iowa was a caucus, which means they gathered in person and decided in their little groups, various groups, as to how they wanted their votes to go. New Hampshire would be an actual primary. Now, when Nikki Haley is already there getting ready, all the others have also been targeting, you know, getting ready to go to New Hampshire as well. Because the New Hampshire primary, I want to double-check my date on this because I have twice, I think, written it down wrong. It is going to be, I had it right here. I am sorry. It sounds like I'm not prepared. I am prepared. I just can't find the darn thing for the actual date. I want to say the 26th, 28th. That's not right. All right. I'll straighten it out. Give myself a chance to make sure that I have it correct. I do not like giving false information. So if I would just simply type it correctly, it will come up and tell me. No, it won't. All right, folks, it is coming up the end of January. January 23rd. That coming, I knew they had. I remember there's a toss around dates as to what they were looking at, but January 23rd. Is now the date. So it's not that far off, and now that's why they're focusing on New Hampshire. Forgive me for acting like I'm not prepared. I try to put in a lot of time to get ready for you, and I often sometimes fail. Hard enough sometimes to remember what date, right, Quentin? What year? What month? Anyway, thanks for joining us. Here we are, January 16, 2024, second hour, Larry Connors, USA. Video of the show, obviously, when we're on the air, is streaming at News Talk STL, Facebook, Twitter, Rumble. Larry Connors USA, Facebook, Twitter, Rumble. If you miss anything, you simply go to LarryConnorsUSA.com or Larry Connors USA Facebook is also available. Listen, this is not hard to remember. LCUSA. I have a lot of friends now that call me by that. Play poker with some guys. Say, is LCUSA coming? I said, I'm here. I'm in for the win. That's the only reason I'm coming. Well, the winner last night was Donald Trump. He got 51% of the ballots cast in the caucus, 51%, which amounted to about 56,000 votes. There was talk that he was maybe going to be around 48. He might reach 50, but not sure, that he could also fall closer down to 40. And if he fell closer down to 40, well, then the other two would have to jump ahead of him, not ahead, but gain more ground on him, but they didn't. He came in with 51%, DeSantis at 21%, Haley at 19%. But, of course, they're still in contention. This is just the beginning. It is a marathon. Nikki Haley pointed that out, and it is a marathon. And they're losing folks left and right as we move forward. But last night, Trump got to deliver a victory speech.
Well, I want to thank everybody. This has been some period of time, and most importantly, we want to thank the great people of Iowa. Thank you. We love you all. What a turnout, what a crowd. And I really think this is time now for everybody, our country, to come together. We want to come together, whether it's Republican or Democrat or liberal or conservative. It would be so nice if we could come together and straighten out the world and straighten out the problems and straighten out all of the death and destruction that we're witnessing. That's practically never been like this. It's just so important. And I want to make that a very big part of our message. We're going to come together. It's going to happen soon, too. It's going to happen soon.
That would be nice to everyone come together. You may still have disagreements, but you don't have to have the divisiveness which we currently have. I don't imagine the majority of my audience agrees with 100% of everything I say. If you're just following along blindly and agree with everything, you need to take a step back and reevaluate, because I don't think you should put your trust and faith into any one man. You know, but at the same time, I'm trying to give you, I think, a very good, qualified answer on some of these issues, but doesn't mean I'm always right. I'll be the first to admit that. Trump, by the way, last night, in addition to talking about trying to come together, they might have expected from the leftists, they might have expected he's going to rip Biden apart limb to limb. That did not happen.
So I don't want to be overly rough on the president, but I have to say that he is the worst president that we've had in the history of our country. He's destroying our country. And likewise, we're going to rebuild our cities, and we'll work with the Democrats to do it. I'd be glad to work with the people in New York. We're going to work with the people in Chicago and L.A. We're going to rebuild our cities, and we're going to make them safe, and we're going to give our police officers immunity. So every time they do something, they don't get sued and stopped. We're going to end crime in our cities. In Iowa, you don't know what that means, but I'll tell you, this is a different place. You don't know about crime. You don't know about getting mugged and getting whacked and getting thrown into subways. And we're going to stop it. And we're going to come down very hard on criminals, and we're going to stop crime in America.
Good. We're all for that. Yeah, Iowa's entirely different than the bigger urban areas, obviously. I mean, Iowa, maybe the biggest crime, generally speaking, would be somebody's cow got through your fence and into your corn. There was one thing he did say, though, that I want to caution against. When he said, we're going to give immunity to police officers. I'm a very big support the blue, total. But again, you can't just say, because they have a badge, they're right. Everyone needs to be determined. Immunity, if you're just talking about class action, just going after anyone, everybody, yes, we need to stop that. We need more police officers on the duty. We need them to be respected better. We need better qualified candidates, which we don't have right now. There are many I know that are going into academies or thinking about it, and they could be very great police officers. But then they look around as to how they'd be treated, even if they're doing their job right. So the candidate who did not even place in the Iowa election, although he had predicted just yesterday afternoon, we're going to come out with something really big. I predict something really big. Well, Vivek, you missed that one, but here's his response.
As of this moment, we are going to suspend this presidential campaign. And this is going to have to be, there is no path for me to be the next president absent things that we don't want to see happen in this country. And I think that I am very worried for our country. I think we are skating on thin ice as a nation. We have done everything in our part to make, and done, every one of us in this room has done our part to save this country. And I am so proud of every one of you who have lifted us up. But we're a campaign founded on the truth. And so that's why we've made that decision today. And I'm also making the decision that this has to be an America First candidate in that White House. As I've said since the beginning, there are two America First candidates in this race. And earlier tonight, I called Donald Trump to tell him that I congratulated him on his victory. And now going forward, he will have my full endorsement for the presidency. And I think we're going to do the right thing for this country.
Now, a lot of folks might think, well, he's just sucking up trying to be the second on the ticket. You have to keep in mind Vivek's history. And when he first came out, I mean, he was a fireball. I mean, and still is. I like the way he takes it directly to the media, much like Trump did. He does it in a better fashion than Trump often does. Ramaswamy, 38 years old, the youngest Republican candidate in the race. He had previously been a New York Times best-selling author. You might remember, I hope you've read the book or aware of it, Woke Inc. It argued against corporate America getting involved in social justice initiatives like pushing gender and things of that nature. I think a lot of us will go with that. And if he's going to support Trump, I would think most of his followers would do the same. Now, Nikki Haley and Vivek had often been at odds with each other. You heard Vivek say there's only, in my opinion, only two candidates really about America first, and that would be Trump and me. So we want to put Nikki into that. But Nikki in her remarks last night, also conciliatory, but still ready for battle.
I want to congratulate President Trump on his win tonight. We have had an amazing 11 months here in the Hawkeye State. I came to Iowa early and often, and I kept coming back. Even though the cold weather is brutal. But the kindness of Iowans will never be lost on me. You're faithful, patriotic, and hardworking Americans. And I will forever be grateful for the time that we had.
And she's already in New Hampshire, getting ready for that January 23rd date. New Hampshire is going to hold the first 2024 presidential primary. And, in fact, I'm looking at some remarks from Secretary of State Scanlon in New Hampshire. Defying the wishes of the Democrat National Committee, they wanted Georgia to be first. New Hampshire said, no, we're going to be first. We always have been. He said, you have a hot childhood dream of growing up to be president of the U.S.? You try to make that a reality in New Hampshire. He said, we're not going to give up our first position. So it's January 23rd. And then, of course, DeSantis, he placed 30% behind Donald Trump last night, 51-21. But DeSantis says, I'm still ready.
They threw everything but the kitchen sink at us. They spent almost $50 million attacking us. No one's faced that much all the way just through Iowa. The media was against us. They were writing our obituary months ago. They even called the election before people even got a chance to vote. But they were just so excited about the fact that they were predicting that we wouldn't be able to get our ticket punched here out of Iowa. But I can tell you, because of your support, in spite of all of that they threw at us, everyone against us, we've got our ticket punched out of Iowa.
And I do like that he made a point that they were calling the election even while folks were still in their caucus meetings or arriving for them. That should not happen. When it comes to presidential races in the general election, they've now adopted a rule that you can't be reporting it's been won on the East Coast while they've yet to show up at the polls or finish voting on the West Coast. But in the caucus last night, they did anyway. Now, leftists probably expected Trump to come out roaring, trying to vent and attack Biden. You heard him say, well, he has not been a great president, but let's try to come together. But he also admitted there are things the Biden administration created we need to resolve.
So we're going to come together. We're going to drill baby drill right away. Yeah. Drill baby drill. We're going to seal up the border. Yeah. Because right now we have an invasion. We have an invasion of millions and millions of people that are coming into our country. I can't imagine why they think that's a good thing. It's a very bad thing. I think it's a group of people that probably larger in number than New York State. And we can't have that. We can't have that. It's not sustainable as a country. It's horrible. And, you know, they're coming from prisons and jails. They're coming from all over. They're coming from countries that most people have never heard of. And they're coming from mental institutions and insane asylums. They're being emptied out into our country. And they're terrorists. Many terrorists are coming in. You know, in 2019, I saw just recently on a poll, they had none in 29, no terrorists. Not, now, I even say there's got to be some, but they have none. And then as soon as this group took over, they have hundreds and hundreds of terrorists coming in, known terrorists, some of them really bad. And many of them are in, and they came in, and nobody knows where they are. This is not a good thing. And we're going to have to deport. We're going to have a deportation level that we haven't seen in this country for a long time, since Dwight Eisenhower, actually.
Since Dwight Eisenhower, which brings me to a point I want to expand. And I'll probably carry it more before we wrap up the end of today's program. But he's talking about Eisenhower had decided after touring Southern California in August 1953 to assess the impact of illegal immigration. President Eisenhower had his attorney general push Congress to enact sanctions against employers of undocumented workers, confiscate vehicles used to bring them to the U.S. Neither proposal became law, but there was a deportation operation that started June 9, 1954. The INS commissioner announced the commencement of Operation Wetback. I know. That sounds derogatory. It was a different time, and they were called Wetback because many probably swam across to get to the states. That's if they were going into Texas. If they're going to California, they didn't have to. But here's something else that when you heard Trump talking about the invasion, 1951, President Truman had a commission on migratory labor and dealing with the social ills on illegal immigration and low wages of the Southwest. And the president stated, the magnitude has reached entirely new levels in the past 7 years. In its newly achieved proportions, it is virtually an invasion. An invasion. Stop and think about that. That was 1951. And you know what they're dealing with at that point? They ended up deporting something like 1.1 million. They had about 42,000 and crossed in 54, so they thought, this is an invasion, we need to shut it down now. Look where the hell we are now in this nation. The numbers north of 12 million easily, and we have no idea where many are. We have no idea what their intent is and what they're going to do. I am going to spend more time on this after my guest coming up in the next hour. My guest you hear often here on News Talk STL, Speaker Tim Jones, along with Christopher Arps. Their program precedes this program. I want to take Tim Jones and ask him a few questions about the Iowa and now New Hampshire primary. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Here's a question for you. Do you know what vermiculite is? It's an insulation in the attics of hundreds of thousands of homes. It looks like kitty litter, but it often contains asbestos. Wellington Environmental is the largest company in the Midwest that can remove that hazard from your home. Wellington has what is called the General. It is a powerful industrial vacuum that can suck vermiculite out of the attic. Now hang on, there's something else you should know. Many of you might qualify for up to a $4,000 rebate. You should at least contact Wellington to see if you qualify. And here's something else. Wellington arrives at the time they give you, not sometime within 4 hours. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. WellingtonSTL.com. Wellington Environmental. your world cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington.
Talk radio made in St. Louis.
Very excited for what you guys are doing for the St. Louis community.
For St. Louis.
Relevant local talk.
Saying what we are thinking.
This is News Talk STL.
No, you guys are awesome. I love you. And it really, it's a tremendous honor to be on the station.
News, analysis, and opinion.
Thanks for us covering the local and global.
People, this is America.
We better open our eyes.
Really local, really good.
News Talk STL at 101.9/94.1
and NewsTalkSTL.com.
As a truck driver, I've learned how important road safety is. I know that large trucks need more time and room to stop. That's why I always hang back and follow other vehicles at a safe distance. Everyone can help keep our roads safe. Next time you're driving, try to remember to always give trucks extra space when you merge in front of them. Let's all plan to share the road safely. Learn how at www.sharetheroadsafely.gov.
Ackerman Toyota had a great 2023, so Jay asked me to thank you for all of your support. Loyal customers making Ackerman Toyota number one in St. Louis Toyota sales. Number one out of the 75 Toyota dealers in the region in Camry and Corolla sales. Ackerman has the lowest prices, great selection. Visit Ackerman at Hampton and 44 or online, AckermanToyota.com. Ackerman Toyota, for life.
This is News Talk STL.
Pretty woman walking down the street. Pretty woman, the kind I like to meet. Pretty woman.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Welcome back. Well, of course, we have the Iowa caucus over last night. New Hampshire coming up the 23rd of this month will be an actual primary. If you recall, the Democrats wanted the first primary to be in Georgia because they thought for sure Biden would look good in that primary. But New Hampshire says, no, we're going to hold on to being number one in the nation. If you want to be on the race to the White House, you've got to go through our state first. Well, right now, of course, the Democrat Party has been laying out where they're going to go from here, and all the it's all set together, reminding you, of course, that they also decided to have their national convention in Chicago. I still cannot get over that fact, but I'm looking at what they're trying to do and where they're going to go with some of the activities, not only within the Democrat primary, but then all the primaries yet to come. We have, at this point, a lot of things still in play. South Carolina primary is now set for Feb 3rd, and Nevada Feb 6th. The 27th of Feb would be Michigan as a primary. March 5 will be the first Super Tuesday. By Super Tuesday, we're talking about several will be allowed and be voting. That would be Alabama, Arkansas, American Samoa, California, Colorado, Iowa mail-in vote, Maine, Massachusetts, Minnesota, North Carolina, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, Vermont, and Virginia. And March 12, Democrats abroad will be voting. Georgia, Mississippi, Washington primaries, and Northern Mariana Islands caucuses. March 19, Arizona, Florida, Illinois, Kansas, Ohio. March 23, Louisiana and Missouri. That's March 23. April 2, Delaware, New York, Rhode Island, Connecticut, Wisconsin. April 8, Alaska and Hawaii. And those will be primaries. North Dakota will hold a caucus. Wyoming will hold a county caucus April 13th. Pennsylvania will have a primary April 23rd. Puerto Rico primary April 28th. May 7th, Indiana primarily. Maryland, Nebraska, West Virginia will have their primaries May 14th. And Kentucky and Oregon primaries set for May 21. Idaho will have caucuses on May 23rd. I'm not done yet. Sorry, it's a long list. June 4, District of Columbia, Montana, New Jersey, New Mexico, South Dakota primaries. June 8, Guam and the U.S. Virgin Island caucuses. That's the list as it's established at this time for the state schedules, the state party decision. But they're subject to change. So everything I just gave you, throw it out. You don't have to necessarily throw it out, but it's going to hold pretty close to that, the way the Democrats have theirs set up. But here's a situation that's changing a little bit. In Idaho, that held caucuses in 2012 and 2016, have now switched to what they call a firehouse primary by mail for 2020, and they're going to go back to in-person caucuses due to the abolition of the presidential primary by the Idaho legislature in 2023. Now, if you recall, the abolition of the state-run presidential primary in Missouri in 2022 caused Democrats to switch to a closed instead of a closed ranked choice firehouse presidential primary. These ranked choice issues, you got to keep in mind, they have a bunch of candidates all in, and then you choose your first, second, and third out of maybe seven candidates. And then the top two, if they have a certain percentage, they go against each other. Could be top three. But unless one gets a majority above and above everyone else, then you got to have still another. To me, it's a jungle fight, and it's often called a jungle primary to that extent. You don't have anybody. You don't have anybody. You just have folks firing away, and they don't know where to put their money, don't know where to put their support. And that's also true of the candidates. The candidates who might have a prime message are having a hard time getting it out, despite whatever money they may be trying to put in. They're not going to get it. I'm looking at what Joe Biden did on December 1st of 2022. He wrote a letter to the Democrat National Committee requesting that diversity should be emphasized in the 2024 Democrat Party presidential primaries. Diversity. There should always have been diversity. Yeah, we're still trying to reach Speaker Tim Jones, and he told me he had a meeting, a luncheon, but he said, I should be clear. Well, you know how when you're a popular guy like Tim Jones, you're going to have a lot of people coming around you, but I really want to get his take directly on the election from last night. We got him? No, we do? All right. Speaker Tim, glad to have you with us, sir.
Larry, thanks for having me. Sorry, I was in a high-level meeting here
in our
state capital in Jefferson City, but it's great to be with you again.
You couldn't make up your mind which dessert you wanted. Is that what you're telling me?
whether to have another martini or not.
By all means, don't let me keep you from that. So we're reducing the amount of time we have for you, but quickly, your summation, and I've got several questions, so we'll try to do quick answer, best you can. First of all, reaction to what happened in Iowa.
So, Larry, despite the shock and awe that you saw on MSNBC and your favorite network, CNN, I was not surprised, Larry. I mean, I saw this develop over the weekend. So Donald Trump, okay, it's no news to anyone that Donald Trump was leading in all of these polls in Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, and all these early states for months, if not for a year. And then suddenly this past Sunday, I watched the talk shows, the Sunday morning talk shows, and they were like, well, it looks like Donald Trump is going to roll through Iowa. Like they just woke up and realized this. Larry, this is the narrative spinning that you always talk about. They were spinning a narrative for at least a year. Oh, Ron DeSantis is going to be competitive. Nikki Haley is surging. All of these made up, fake, phony, fake news narrative talking points, I guess, to get clicks and eyeballs. Look, I like Governor Ron DeSantis. I think he's been one of the best governors we've ever had in this country. Nikki Haley, I'm a little softer on my support of her, but you know, she's got some bona fides as well,
right?
But neither of them were putting up much of a fight at all. And we all saw this, but the media was trying to spin a different story yesterday. So yesterday was basically the culmination.
Yeah. It wasn't a matter that he's going to win, but how much, but now let me break down some things very quickly. First of all, Vivek came out and said, I'm giving my support to Trump. What does that mean for Trump? Is it valuable or not?
Yeah, Larry, I think it's valuable. I think it's worth at least 5 points, if not more. You're right. They definitely changed the goalposts on Trump yesterday as well. They said, well, yeah, he's going to win, but now he's got to win big. He's got to get to 50%. None of them thought he was actually going to do that, and he pulled that off as well. So now that Donald Trump has pole vaulted over all of the metrics that they laid out, what next? I mean, is there any reason that we need to keep up with this facade that Donald Trump's not going to be the nominee?
Well, what they could do, though, is what they could do, sir, is as MSNBC and CNN and then last night, Jake Tapper is saying, you can hear Donald Trump in his victory speech under my voice repeating his anti-immigrant rhetoric. And then Rachel Maddow said, we're not going to transmit his remarks because we're arbitrary. We know what the truth is, and we're not going to give him unfiltered live platform. In other words, they are going to just do everything they can to dismiss him and make him disappear.
No, you're exactly right. And what they don't want to admit now is what they didn't want to admit, what, in 2016, 8 years ago. 8 years ago, Donald Trump stormed on the scene as someone who people believed was finally going to do something to fix our completely broken illegal immigration problem. This is an elite. These people are illegal aliens. They should not be. Their very act of being here is in violation of our law. That doesn't mean that we are racist. It doesn't mean that we are anti-immigrant. It doesn't mean that we do not like brown and black people. There are a ton of Americans of all shapes, sizes, colors, creeds, and codes. The Hispanic American community, the legal Hispanic American community is up in arms about the fact that they came to this country legally, and now the Biden administration says, oh, anybody can come.
Sure,
no,
sure.
Larry. They know that this is a threat to the institutions.
Well, Joy Reid, sir, made a point last night that Nikki Haley never had a chance. She's a brown-skinned person running against two white guys. And Nikki Haley was incensed. She said, my skin color has nothing to do with my ability.
Yes, Larry, what they're terrified about is the fact that Donald Trump, and I will say, with a lot of assistance of some great Republican governors like Ron DeSantis and Greg Abbott, have made it known, and I think a majority, if not approaching a supermajority of Americans, realize illegal immigration is a problem. And when a supermajority of Americans realize that, Larry, the race-baiting industry of the national liberal corporate media is over. Donald Trump threatens their very existence, and that's why they don't like it.
And we're going to have more, I've told the audience more in my last segment here on the past immigration issues when even Harry Truman recognized we have an invasion. His words, Truman made those remarks in the 50s. Now, one other thing, going forward into New Hampshire in the last 30 seconds, quick decision on how New Hampshire runs, and is Vivek now set to be second on the ticket for Trump?
I think he's making a play for it, and Donald Trump may consider him, but if anybody can tell you that they're going to predict who Donald Trump's going to choose for vice president, then you might as well maybe buy those bridges in Brooklyn. No, so I don't. I think Donald Trump's made up his mind, but I don't think anybody knows exactly what that is. There is a very good Trump operation. In fact, Larry, I'll see if I can hook you up with this guy. I have a very good friend, Steve Stepanek, who is running Trump for New Hampshire. Former party chair, and I think they're going to deliver a huge victory for Donald Trump in New Hampshire.
All right. Tim, thank you as always. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Larry. Always great to be on with you.
You bet. Speaker Tim Jones on with Chris Tarp. It's right before we come on every day. Make sure you hear that. And we're going to deal with more of the immigration issue as it was seen in the 50s and how it compares to today. Stand by.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Here's a question for you. Do you know what vermiculite is? It's an insulation in the attics of hundreds of thousands of homes. It looks like kitty litter, but it often contains asbestos. Wellington Environmental is the largest company in the Midwest that can remove that hazard from your home. Wellington has what is called the General. It is a powerful industrial vacuum that can suck vermiculite out of the attic. Now hang on. I'm always glad to have new sponsors, but I have turned some down. See, I only endorse clients if I believe in them. And I've been a spokesman for John Beal for 10 years. Through those years, listeners said they went with John Beal because they trusted me. And just recently, a woman named Mary wrote, "We got a John Beal roof based on your recommendation." Thank you, Mary, and all the others for calling John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
Sometimes you want to do something extra special for someone. Vincent's Jewelers could help you. Maybe you want to do something for yourself. Mark a date, something you accomplished. It doesn't have to be anything really expensive, but it has to mean something now and for the future. Vincent's, locally owned, just asked for the chance to work with you, as they have with me, on Olive, just east of 270. Every day, new specials at vincentsjewelers.com or Vincent's Facebook.
The United States Deputy Sheriff's Association is a national nonprofit and the largest non-governmental provider of services to law enforcement. The USDSA assists city, county, state, and federal agencies with free safety equipment donations and officer survival training, along with cash donations to families of law enforcement officers who perish in the line of duty, a citizen awareness program, and more. For more information on United States Deputy Sheriff's Association, please visit usdeputy.org.
One of the five most traumatic experiences in life is moving. I can assure you that McGuire Moving can help ease that pressure. Moving into a new home or a new business, locally, internationally, McGuire is rated number one. More than 80 years of experience. Free estimate, call McGuire, 314-241-0600. 241-0600. McGuireMoving.com.
This is News Talk STL.
Pretty woman walking down the street. Pretty woman, the kind I like to meet. Pretty woman.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
So, as you were hearing Speaker Tim Jones talk about Biden and the immigration issue, is something that is pretty hard to find Democrats that are all in favor of an open border policy. Now, it all sounded great. It all sounded great, just like the great green pie in the sky when it came to climate energy and worshiping at that altar, until they realized it doesn't work. Most classic example, as we discussed in the previous hour. Did you miss a previous hour? Shame on you. Well, I know there are times you cannot devote the time clearly. That's why we always put everything up as a podcast for you at LarryConnorsUSA.com. LarryConnorsUSA.com or LarryConnorsUSA Facebook. You can always listen and or hear, watch if you choose. And you won't miss anything. If you simply subscribe, by the way, we'll send it to you free of charge. We do not sell your information. But I don't want anyone to miss anything. And I know you have your lives to live. Believe me, I fully understand that. But the thing, Speaker Tim Jones, who is on with Christopher Arps and their program right before we come on each night at 6 o'clock, was talking about the immigration issue has broken many of the Democrats and their ranks and solidarity. We've had enough things already that could have and have separated many of them, abortion being one. Not all Democrats are in favor of abortion. Not as clear as some are on the other side. And not all of them are in favor of having to rely on foreign oil for our energy. They're not all in favor of that. They're also not all in favor of shoving transgender activists in front of our children in grade school. They're not. Look, the left likes to make out those on the right as extremists. You're a MAGA extremist. MAGA being Make America Great Again. To that extent, yeah, I am an extremist. I want to make America great again. I'm also a nationalist. I believe in this country above others. I want my president to believe in this country more than other countries. And yes, there are cliques within inside of the right, far, far right, that I don't associate with, and we really have nothing in common other than the fact you might have a C behind our word, or maybe an I, an independent. A lot of independents caught in the midst as well. So it's easy to make the leftists, the Democrats, all a boogeyman, just like they have done to the right. It's wrong to throw those broad swath labels. I'm guilty of doing it from time to time. I know that. And maybe you are. But I'm telling you, it is wrong. Because within that, there are a lot of people, they don't really buy into what their side is saying. But one, they're either too afraid to speak out because they could lose their job and what they had to provide for their family, and they could have their business go upside down. I mean, all kinds of ways that they could be punished. And that happens on the right side as well, too. Don't think it's just labeled, I mean, just on one side. But beware that every time that you kind of throw out, and I try to make it progressives, and when I say leftists, I'm not even talking about Democrats. I'm talking about those who are so far to the left that JFK looks like a first-class conservative nowadays. In fact, to that extent, Obama is not so much with them anymore either. We had a piece we aired earlier as well about how Molly Hemingway with the Federalist said, Obama is worried about his legacy, the way it's going with under Biden. And part of that, I would suspect, also has to do with the immigration issue. Because by this open border policy, when Obama was in office, he had a closed border. He set up the original cages that then Trump was using, as they were called, cages, to house immigrants, illegals. But they didn't call them cages during the Obama years. They were detaining centers. But as soon as Trump had them, oh, they're cages. But Obama looks at what has happened to the nation and how Joe Biden is really messing up his legacy of what he did accomplish. I don't think he did accomplish a lot, to be quite honest. I think he's more divisive than anything else, but I'm not going to totally deny some things the man did. Trump did not do everything great either, but he did do a lot if you look at our economy. Did he completely drain the swamp? Nope, because he was a newbie. He relied on people that were there, and he took advice for the wrong people. But when it comes to the immigration issue, I'd mentioned earlier, and I want to get into it in more detail for you. See, I grew up in Texas, so I was familiar with what they called the Bracero program. The Bracero program allowed Mexican citizens to come into our nation for a period of time and do work in the fields for the farmers. Sometimes they were just small farmers, but bigger than they could handle by themselves. And then some were corporate farms. And then you also had those who were employed in, you know, chicken farms, butchering calves, and so forth. But the Bracero program didn't last that long, because it got terminated in 1964. And when it did, immediately more illegals started coming back again. They'd been moved out because of a major deportation prior to that time. Let me give you the background. In 1951, President Truman had a commission on migratory labor. Now, migratory labor refers to those who are coming here, moving as the crops move to come pick the cotton, and then maybe go to the other areas to pick other plants and so forth. And they'll finally, there are no more crops, you have to go back south, and then you come back again when the crops are ready. But Truman's Labor Department blamed low wages of the Southwest and social ills on illegal immigration. And they concluded, and Harry Truman signed off on this, so he might as well have said, these are my words. The magnitude has reached entirely new levels in the past 7 years. We're talking about 1951, shortly after the end of World War II. We had a lot of men back from the war. They were capable of working. Some were not because of their injuries. But many of the farmers needed hard labor again, and so they wanted them back. And they were ready to come across and earn what wages they were paid. And they were not paid a lot, believe me. They were subjected to abuse and low wages. But they noticed in this report, we're at entirely new levels in the last 7 years. It is, quote, virtually an invasion. The exact words being used now by many in this nation, even Democrats. Even New York City Mayor Adams said the other day, we're being invaded up here. No kidding. Well, where do you think they came from? They came from the border, but Abbott sent them up here. Well, you said you were sanctuary city. You said you wanted them. You'd take them. You'd feed them. You'd clothe them. And they have, but they've kicked kids out of school to use their facilities. They've kicked veterans out of homes just so they can put some illegals into group homes. And they want more money. They don't want to stop it. They just want more money. After that report came out, Dwight Eisenhower, again, that was in 1951, in 1953 toured Southern California, and he had his attorney general to push to enact sanctions against employers of undocumented workers to confiscate any vehicles that were brought in to use them. Bring them in. They could not get either proposal as law. But they did on June 9, 1954, the INS commissioner announced Operation Wetback. First phase began in California and Arizona. They were rounding up people that they thought were here illegally. Now, you do not have to swim the river to get into Arizona and California, but if you went into Texas, you did, the Rio Grande. Either wading through it or swimming. 63,000 individuals in Texas left and went back to Mexico on their own because they didn't want to be rounded up. That's just in Texas. But I'm looking at a piece out of the LA Times dated 1954 or shortly 55, maybe somewhere in the, between those two dates. I can't make the date out here. The title says everything. Los Angeles Times. 500 nabbed by L.A. wetback raiders. So they were deporting to the best they could. They ended up, according to the INS, deporting, apprehending, deporting 1.1 million. We've got 12, maybe 15 times that number inside our country now. I don't know how you could carry out a mass deportation now, especially since many have been here as long as they have. But they'll try to at least start by closing the border. That's the first start. This administration not going to, and anyone that is a leftist-leaning Biden open border policy person isn't going to either. And I want to remind you again, it is not just the presidential election that's important in 2024. It's every congressional seat and every Senate seat. We cannot lose the House lead as slim as it is now, and we need to take control of the Senate. Otherwise, we'll continue to go down this dark road, which leads us off a cliff. I know I have a lot of folks at Boeing that are good friends and also listeners of this program. You know how much I appreciate you, and I appreciate what Boeing does overall. And I fly often on Boeing flights, so I'm not worried about it. But there have been some issues lately, and Boeing is now acknowledging where they stand on some things. This is from Epoch Times, and the title reads, Boeing admits not where we need to be. In terms of quality amid scrutiny, and that was that reference over that door plug blowout, you know, when that one just recently happened, the Boeing 737 MAX 9 that the panel tore off mid-flight, really wasn't even mid-flight, it's barely gotten up to maybe 16,000 feet. If it had been higher, that entire panel that just would be a window section that just blew out, it could have been catastrophic, because the higher you would be, the greater pressure, an implosion that would happen. And as it turned out, no one was pulled out of the jet. One young boy had his shirt ripped off of him because of the winds. And thank goodness no one was sitting in that seat next to that window, nor the seat next to it. You talk about God just putting people in the right spot, and nobody was in either one of those two seats. The third seat, the aisle seat, was occupied. Parts of the seat nearest the window also went out the door, as did some cell phones and anything else that suddenly could be picked up, earbuds, things of that nature. So a panel was convened, obviously, to investigate it. The FAA, as a result, immediately grounded all 737 MAX 9s and ordered enhanced inspections. Boeing last week said it would cooperate fully and transparency. The problem is Boeing out of Seattle has had problems in the past where they did not apparently do full and proper inspections and did not do what was needed. And in fact, as often happens, and I will never forget this college course I took one time dealing with regulatory agencies, an agency is created to regulate a particular industry, and pretty soon it becomes basically a part of the industry it's regulating. And the FAA had done that to some extent with Boeing. But again, the pilot in this case was able to declare an emergency, notify air traffic control, and get immediate landing back. And they were only at 16,000. If they'd been at cruising altitude of 38,000, 40,000+ feet, would have been massive. Boeing told the Epoch Times in a written statement that it welcomes the FAA's announcement. It will cooperate fully, transparently. We support all actions that strengthen quality and safety. We're taking actions across our production system. Did not address the FAA threat to pull the plane maker's so-called organization designation authority. This is where Boeing, those who work with Boeing, you certainly know this, the ability that Boeing's own staff could certify the aircraft's safety. See, right there is an issue. And this is not just with Boeing. There are others that do the same thing. Car makers, if they're certifying their own safety, you know, you could have a problem that could be laid on something that should have been caught if it had been properly inspected. But that's far different than being 40,000 feet in the air and something was looked over or kind of given a check mark, or it's okay for now. They'll get them through a couple more flights before we have to deal with it if they're in a plane. The company's self-inspect came under scrutiny when two Boeing 737 MAX 8s, remember those? They crashed in 2018 and 2019. And that ended up being a combination of not proper trained, pilots weren't properly trained. Boeing did not want to have them have to go through new training because that would add cost to the airline buying the plane. They wanted to just say, hey, they can sit and use a computer and learn to apply it and they'll be fine. Well, that did not work. And then there were issues beyond that. I don't have time to go into all of them, but I want to stress to you, I believe in the safety of flying. I'm a pilot. Well, let me put it this way. I'm a commercial instrument multi-engine plane pilot, but I'm not jet-rated. And at the same time, Boeing, I trust, as a good airline company, and the companies using Boeing rely on them as well. Should not be fearful of flying, but if you already are, I can't do anything to change that, and I wouldn't try to change it. You just had to work around it. But what I just told you is not a dismissal, not an indictment of Boeing nor the employees. But I don't like the fact that they were able to certify them themselves. Remember our pledge, one nation under God.